Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As winter approaches, some cold realities are setting in. The West's sanction war against Russia has failed. It is the West that is feeling the economic pain. And Ukraine's energy infrastructure is slowly being degraded. Common sense would dictate a major rethink. For these people in power, that is inconceivable. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Matthew Arendt in Montreal. He is a senior fellow at the American University in Moscow and director of the Rising Tide Foundation of Canada. And with him, we have Anthony Weber. He is an independent political commentator. And in Los Angeles, we cross to Payin. He is a strategic planning consultant, a private equity advisor, and an independent economic analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Payin, I'm going to go to you first in Los Angeles because you got up earliest for this program, and it's much appreciated by all of us. In the broadest sense, what is really at stake here? Because we have all of these apocalyptic pronouncements coming about, you know, Joe Biden with his loose talk about Armageddon, which is completely disgraceful and irresponsible. And then we have figures like Joseph Borrell, the EU foreign policy chief, Stoltenberg, the head of NATO, saying, you know, a victory for Russia is a defeat for the collective West. My words, okay, paraphrasing here. It's very apocalyptic on one side. What is at stake here? Because it looks to me that the West is afraid of being humiliated. Go ahead, in Los Angeles.
Well, Ukraine, first of all, Ukraine is NATO's sacrificial lamb toward essentially preventing not just Russian, this is forgotten in Western press or just tactically omitted, not just Russian, but wider Eurasian economic comeuppance against essentially, you know, over a century and a half of transatlantic hegemony, regardless of how fiscally teetering that hegemony might be at the moment. Just wanted to make a note. This is forbidden information within any sort of Western press regarding Russia, and to address the issue of wider stakes. Regarding Russia, no one in mainstream corporate Atlanticist press is allowed to ask simple questions such as just why weren't Gorbachev or Yeltsin or even Putin from 1999 until about 2003 considered the penultimate evil on earth? Why Putin and Russia since then? The answer is because the Kremlin decided to outpace Anglo-American energy as far as its resource book of the past 160 years by relying on its innately vast pools of oil and natural gas for projecting economic power. Yet it was John D. Rockefeller who infamously said that, quote unquote, competition is a sin. Hence this manic drive for regime changing Moscow back into ideally a drunken, inept, and thus Western compliant Yeltsin figure, or better yet, a Volodymyr Tony Montana's Zelensky figure, while splitting Russia ideally into pieces and appropriating its resources once again. The stakes have never been higher for the ruling transatlantic occult establishment elite, who are at this point willing to sacrifice billions of people if necessary to retain and scale their political, economic, technocratic, and metaphysical power. They collectively make Dr. Strangelove look like Mr. Bean.
You know, add flesh to what Pai just said here, go back to the history of the Yukos affair, and that's where it all started. Pai is absolutely right. Putin's a reformer. He's a Westerner. And then the Yukos affair happened, and it's been downhill ever since because Russia's protecting its economic resources, primarily energy. Matthew, let me go to you. Because we've heard all of this talk, no negotiations, don't give up 1 inch of ground, all of this here, which is actually a signal that, okay, fine, we don't need to negotiate, we're going to end this the hard way. And the West is saying, and they already know that Ukraine probably can't win this, but they're going to continue to support its war effort here. I mean, this is absolutely idiocy and nonsense, and as Pai has pointed out, the billions of people around the world are going to be impacted or are being impacted by this. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, yes, as Lindsey Graham famously recently said, they're willing to fight to the last Ukrainian, and that's great. They really just see the people who live in Ukraine as just pure cannon fodder, and this is really coming out loud and clear as it speaks right now. I think that what we're facing right now is a logic of scarcity. The financier oligarchy that is trying to manage and contain and control the multipolar alliance, which has emerged, and Russia is obviously a key player in that, are desperate that a new type of system is going to be brought online that is premised around abundance and the creation of free energy that will not justify the type of Malthusian population reduction that they desire. And they have been working towards this for many decades. And that's why they sort of want to go back in time to the 1990s and just reverse the clock and pretend that the Belt and Road Initiative didn't exist. The Eurasian Economic Union did not exist. And unfortunately, Ukraine has been playing a geopolitical role as a destabilization force in that process. But it's a plaything, and they're willing to dispose of the people living in Ukraine as much as they're willing to ultimately dispose of the people living in Europe or in the United States, because the elites currently, the technocratic elites, are completely psychologically, emotionally, intellectually detached from the citizens that they are supposed to represent. They're willing to sacrifice them.
I would even go further. They're ideologically possessed. That's why they cannot see other options. They're ideologically possessed people. And they're all interchangeable, aren't they? You know, it doesn't really matter what leader it is. They can be moved over to another country because we have a ruling class that, you know, they talk about diversity, but they're all exactly the same. They may look different, but they are all exactly the same. Anthony, is something that's already been mentioned in the program that I think is really important is that Russia and countries that are remained friends and aligned with it, friendly with it, they represent an alternative to the West. And the West cannot accept that. They cannot accept that anyone else can do it better, because the West is failing. And that's why we have so many countries around the world that will not condemn Russia for the military operation in Ukraine. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yes, that's correct, Peter. And I concur with what's been said so far. If you look at the situation regarding the media, particularly in the UK, it's absolutely impossible to have another point of view regarding Ukraine, except the government's, which, of course, is the globalist view. And, of course, we've had the situation where it doesn't matter which prime minister is in power, whether it was Boris Johnson or Liz Truss or, whoever's going to be coming next, they're going to support the policy on Ukraine. And of course, there's these big calls for a general election in the UK. And lo and behold, the Labour Party have got exactly the same policy on Ukraine and Russia. Yep. So it's a disastrous situation. And do they ever ask the people of Ukraine what they want? Why shouldn't they have a referendum about whether they want to end the war? Because I suspect a lot of them do.
Okay. So let me go to Los Angeles here. After everything we've seen, particularly since February 24th, is there any way going back? Because, you know, there are these people, a lot of them are libertarians, too, for some reason, think, you know, if we just go back to the Minsk Accords, you know, that could be a point of reference. I mean, I think these people are all delusional. I think bridges have been cut. I think a deep chasm has created here. And there are countries like India, Russia, China that have no interest in going back to what was before because it didn't work for them. So why should they reconsider it? And on top of it, all of these Western leaders with their smiles and dangling shiny little things in front of your face, they don't keep their word. Actually, they lie a lot. Go ahead, Pai.
I mean, there's no way to go back because there's been a farce as far as the storyline, certainly since as early as 2008 with the global financial crisis. What that permanently did was shift so much of the Western middle class that had built over decades prior since the Second World War out of gear, and hence why you have homeless strewn across otherwise tony suburban lawns across America, North America. That's why I mentioned earlier the stakes are massive, because the entire Eurasian East and certainly the global South are on to the facade and are trying to circumvent what has been essentially transatlantic economic hegemonic rule for quite a while. Just quickly, a note on tactics here regarding Russia. 11,000 sanctions have been applied against Russia since February, since the start of the war. They've spectacularly boomeranged, because you cannot sanction such a massive global energy provider without essentially collapsing your own brittle house of cards, fiscal house of cards eventually. The Russian ruble is the strongest performing currency of 2022, yes. Outpacing what it was before sanctions. Russians have earned $200 billion in energy exports since February, despite locked trade elsewhere. Like, the East needs to really do some sober soul searching over what it's trying to do.
It's, you know, Matthew, it's one of the, and I have to say, you know, my road record about talking about the what would become this conflict and what the conflict became, I have that down almost perfectly, except for one thing that Pai mentioned. I got the ruble thing completely wrong, because before February 24th, it was a soft currency. Now it's a hard currency. Amazing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, if anything, it's driven more nations of the multipolar alliance of Eurasia into each other's arms, and they've nations like China, India, Russia, who have already been moving in towards a very strong brotherhood, have only doubled down now. And I mean, India is now buying, what, 8 times more energy, 9 times more fertilizers from Russia than they were the same time last year. China, it's boomed. They've made up for all of their losses to Europe. And Putin has recently said as well, look, it's on you. The ball is in your court. All you have to do is turn on the taps. We're even willing to provide all of the energy you need and more through even Turkey, if you want. There's still viability in parts of the Nord Stream 2 that could supply the vital needs of Europeans, who I think are getting massive exhaustion right now over the Ukraine propaganda. And they only want to survive this winter and beyond and have a life. That's what your average citizen wants. But Russia and China and India are providing an actual method on how to actually do this competently. And we're running out of time. I mean, it's the chances to actually get on board with this and avoid World War III, or at least avoid a dark age scenario in the West is.
The West is on a trajectory of deindustrialization, and there seem to be a lot of people on board with that. Again, nobody asked the people of Europe if they would vote on such a thing, but that's what they're getting. I'm going to talk a little bit more about how energy politics and green politics have become a perfect storm. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Anthony and Worthing. It's really quite interesting to me how the conflict in Ukraine is dovetailed in with this new Green Deal that so many of the elites are pushing here, that nobody gets to vote on, by the way. Nobody ever votes on this, okay? But the Ukraine issue is a pivot for them to get this agenda on board, because it's an emergency here. You know, I'm a green person. I like nature and all of that. But Anthony, can you explain to me the boneheadedness of Europeans saying, we're just going to, no more Russian gas. We don't want it. It's evil gas, okay? I mean, these people are not thinking pragmatically. Fine, you know, over years, new technologies, all that's nice and fine. No, they really want a quick departure from this. Blowing up the pipelines, Nord Stream, pushed it along here. I mean, I can't see a future of Europe having any kind of productivity with no cheap energy. Anthony, how can you explain that?
Well, the reality is, of the previous position we had with cheap energy from Russia was actually assisting the green agenda. And now anyone who's pushing it now must be mad, because economically it just doesn't work. But they're also pushing unsafe and dangerous nuclear power as an alternative to Russian energy. So it's all a complete and utter catastrophe. And nobody's been asked, although in Hungary they are going to have a referendum on sanctions against Russia. In the UK, there is a campaign to have a referendum on the UK being neutral in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. But it's been completely no platform by literally all the mainstream media. We're up against complete propaganda on this issue. But I do think these things which are happening are reversible, because you look at what happened with certainly the UK with COVID-19 and vaccines agenda. Overnight, they changed the propaganda and suddenly we're out of lockdown and everything else. So I think these propagandists are quite capable of changing the agenda when they see that they've lost the battle in regard to the Ukraine conflict. Although they won't come out of it very well, because Russia will undoubtedly come out of it very well, and the so-called Western economies will come out of them extremely badly. But, you know, we say the West, what does this actually mean? Because these countries are all controlled by globalist vested interests, and we've seen this in the UK recently. And what we need is a bit more democracy in the UK and Western European countries, because we're having policies which have no approval from the public regarding this conflict in the Ukraine and Russia. And, you know, we need to bear in mind that Russia was an ally in both the First and the Second World Wars. It wasn't that long ago that a number of members of the royal family were officially visiting Russia to improve relations. And I think it's not impossible to go back to an era when, if you remember, we had the President Reagan and Gorbachev agreements. We need people who have got statesmanlike abilities like we had then. But unfortunately, that's very much lacking with Biden and so on.
I wish I could agree with you, but let me go back to Pi in Los Angeles. The problem is that we have elites now that are just ideologically possessed. They do not see other options. That's why I don't see any real leader coming out of the West, because their ideology doesn't allow it. It's kind of like the history of Catholicism. You know, once you have the Savior, you know, you can't have someone following. No, we already found it. Okay, this ideology is so frozen. And Pi, if someone of stature say we should sit down and negotiate, then you're just a Putin propagandist and stooge. They have painted this discursive themselves into this discursive corner. They can't find a way out. And their material being is going to be degraded very, very quickly. I mean, the winter is starting. That's what I started out in my introduction. The consequences are going to be very grave. And not just for one winter, for many winters ahead. Go ahead, Pi.
Yeah, I mean, their cards are limited as far as playing. First of all, the green movement you guys were referencing earlier, for decades, what that has been is essentially the top power structure, the owners of the banks who are tied very closely, as Matthew can attest, to the energy companies and have been for well over a century. That's just sweeping propaganda. The green movement in large part has been a means for trying to get the rest of the world's attention deflected away from oil, natural gas, carbon based fuels, because it is the monopoly, or perceived as the required monopoly, of London, Swiss, and New York banks. And yet Western and Eurasia is assisting Russia and its energy spine while integrating sweeping infrastructure growth, as Matthew was referencing earlier. Russia and China will simply expedite the replacement of this 49-year-old petrodollar reserve recycling standard while the U.S. Fed hikes interest rates into a deep recession and the largest banks manipulate fuel prices high enough to seemingly engineer transatlantic stagflation. You really have to ask yourself, like, the propaganda on one hand, which Anthony was referencing, versus tactics on the other, it becomes very transparent to anybody who's sober and thinking and has any appreciation for history, what's happening in the West.
You know, Matthew, you definitely need an appreciation of history in this day and age, because very few people seem to have it. It seems, you know, you don't have to be Einstein to figure out, well, Europe became safe and prosperous because, oh, I just got it. Cheap energy. So the Indians and the Chinese and everybody else in the world saw this formula work during the entire post-war period, and they want to emulate it. The Europeans don't want to do it. That's fine. That's your choice. It's your craven choice. No one is cutting it off from you. You're cutting yourself off. So what people see this as, and it's just patently mad. Go ahead, Matthew.
It is patently mad. I mean, no creature in the biosphere that we could see willfully just commits suicide on their own. This is not something that ever really happens. And it seems like there has been an ideology, as you've alluded to, and Payan has also made the point. There is a governing ideology, almost a pseudo-religion, and it's a pseudo-religion masquerading behind a form of scientific, sociological theorizing that is purely ivory tower, that posits that we can go back in time to a state of pristine stasis, no change, where we somehow live in equilibrium with unchanging nature, with technologies like windmills that we had used last in the 13th, 14th centuries, It was fine then when we had less than a billion people, but today with 8 billion or more, that is not going to work. And the effects of trying to undercut the type of abundance and means of production, both in food as well as industrial base, that this requires is blood-curdling. The unfortunate thing is that we once had a very viable pro-capital creation ethic before I was born, which has been under attack now for many, many decades. And Russia, China, and India especially are really learning from what we used to do and seeing, well, why can't they simply use the model that made the West once great of industrial progress, leaping beyond the limits to growth by embracing new discoveries and applying it for the needs of your society? That's what made us work. And we've let that go now for decades by design. And we have a small window of opportunity to get it back. But it's a closing window.
You know, Anthony, when Joe Biden became president, I think it was during his inaugural address, he said, America will have a foreign policy that supports the middle class. That's not even a bad joke today. But the reason why I mentioned it and something that Matthew had to say is that, you know, you have the Eurasian countries that are actually thinking about their middle class, because the middle classes for the Eurasian countries is a relatively new phenomena, and it's something that makes their societies work. Again, you always say best practices, you know, borrow the best practices. You know, Europe did that in the post-war era, building up middle class, in the U.S. as well. But they've abandoned that for ideology. And again, you know, one of the things I live here in Moscow, the West is terrified of alternatives, a conservative society, a society that has religious beliefs, all these things, because most of the world looks at the West now in bewilderment about their wokeism and values and whatever these things. They don't understand it. I don't understand it. But what I do see, I reject it. And I think I speak for the majority of the world, Anthony.
Yes, one thing which is pretty clear, it's a battle between those who promote the woke agenda and those who don't. And it's been increasingly seen that Russia has got values, whereas the West have got them decreasingly so. And your point about the middle class, and it's not just the middle class, it's basically the lower income people as well. That it is time that certainly the UK and other Western countries looked at what was in their country's best interests, and it's never, ever been in the best interests of the UK to be involved in the Ukraine conflict. Yeah. And you've got the vast majority of countries in the world who are not sanctioning Russia. That's involving 7/8 of the world's population. And a lot of countries, even the ones who have condemned Russia in the UN, have done their own trade and energy deals with Russia. So we're just cutting our own throats, the countries who are continuing with these sanctions and pouring money into a very corrupt Ukrainian government.
Yep.
So, you know, they're the 30th most corrupt country in the world. We're told we're fighting for freedom and democracy there, but they don't have freedom and democracy.
I want to go to Los Angeles, Pi. I want to give you the last 30 seconds for getting up so early today. Last 30 seconds, go to you.
Just quickly back to Ukraine. The World Bank declared recently that Ukraine's economy will shrink to 8 times more than that of Russia's. But again, as we've reiterated multiple times during the program, London, Washington, Brussels, and Tel Aviv do not care. They'll throw the entirety of Europe, certainly Ukraine, to be sacrificed at arresting Russian and, more importantly, wider Eurasian economic integration and growth.
Okay, wonderful point to end on. I want to thank my guests in Montreal, Worthing, and in Los Angeles. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.